PGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 553, recorded on November 5th, 2019.
Welcome to the 553rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 386th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falk.
The BGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah. You know, I haven't posted the past two episodes, and I'm just going to say forget it. I'll just post those at some point. So this podcast just jumped ahead two things, and it'll just be a mystery for a while why it jumped to from 550 to 553. Anyway, those two episodes are out there in the ether. I'll post them when I get a chance, probably when I need a week off or something. Or 2 weeks off. Whatever. You sound shocked.
We had some good stuff in those episodes.
I thought so, too.
Which is why they'll eventually reach people's ears. Maybe I'll post them and fit them in the back, and people will see two new episodes that somehow escaped their attention mysteriously. It's like, wait, there wasn't a 551 and 552, but now there are. How'd that happen? Because you can't do that. You can't cheat. You can set the date to be earlier. Like, I could set the date for the other podcast to be October 31st, and no one would ever know. It didn't actually post on October 31st, but it's timestamped that way.
It'll be like the missing Leisure Suit Larry 4, but this actually exists.
Yeah, basically. Except they actually did something, yeah. I ordered a new rig last week. And it's, you know, would you like to hear some of it?
Sure.
So, I don't care. I think if anybody cares, but, you know, it's a Ryzen 3700X, 3.6 gigahertz, 8-core, 16-thread CPU. One thing I did not do is I did not overclock it. I don't trust overclocking because, you know, it'll make your – even if you have coolant, you know, it's still going to make your PC run hot. And there's just so many bad things that can happen when you overclock, you know. So I'm not overclocking. I'm not that desperate for speed.
Yeah, it always seems unnecessary.
Yeah. That doesn't mean I didn't put a lot of thermal compound on it so that it'll cool that way. I also have both air and liquid cooling in it. I got, for the graphic card, I got the NVIDIA 1660 GTX, which is VR ready, although I'm not going to get a VR headset anytime soon.
Yeah, my set is VR ready as well, and it's just like I have my PSVR, and I don't know if an Oculus is worth it. Plus, I don't know if I have the space for it.
The hard drive, it's going to have half a terabyte of SSD, and it's going to have a 3 terabytes data drive. So yeah, I'm going to put the games I really want fast on the SSD, and everything else on 3 terabyte. Things that don't really require the speed. Data drive, you know, so but still.
Yeah.
There's going to be 16 gigabytes of memory. Here's the thing. The reason why I did CyberPower PC, and also I do iBuyPower, is that they always have sales and all that stuff. So I got a free upgrade from 16 gigabyte DDR3 to a 16 gigabyte DDR4 and a special branded version. And I probably will buy 16 more gigs for $70 from Amazon, so I'll have a 32-gigabyte drive. So I'm not going to run out of memory anytime soon.
Nice.
It also comes with a free glowy keyboard.
That's always fun.
So is this something you're going to have to put together, or is it being assembled?
Oh, it's being assembled. I have to wait another week for it. By the way, the GTX 1660... I actually checked this out. Not as in a GDDR5, but I got 6 gigabytes on that thing. Not 4, but 6. So yeah, I'm not going to need another graphic card for a long while, I think.
Nice. Yes.
And for the extra $20, I got the super warranty, which means for the first year there's free shipping on their part, and it's a 3-year thing. So, yeah, I mean, CyberPower and iBuyPower, both of them have really been good to me over the years, you know. So, well, I'd still rather have my old PC, the laptop I have, to tell you how old it is, and I've had it for 8 years, and I got it from iBuyPower. The laptop I'm using right now is basically the same as my old desktop. So it was time for a change. And the last thing was that the hard drive just went kaput. It just died on me. So.
Are you excited to have the new rig?
Oh, yeah, especially since I actually qualified for credit, so I'm only paying $87 a month for it for the next 3 months. And there's no prepayment penalty. So if I, you know what, there's $1,000 left on it, I'm just going to pay the $1,000 and just get rid of it now. So, yeah, because the interest is already predetermined. Normally this would be $1,390. I'm going to be spending $1,515 as part of the, as part of interest. So if I want to pay it all, I can pay it all. There's no penalties. So, but right now I'm just chilling. I like the $87 a month.
Why would there be penalties for paying at all?
Well, here's the thing. If they didn't tell me what the interest was going to be at the end of it, then there would be penalties, because when you make a loan, they make money by charging interest.
Right.
So the interest is already – I already know what the interest is, and the total that I have to pay is with interest included. So if I pay that immediately, you know, they don't mind. They're getting the money one way or the other.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. If that wasn't, then there would be a penalty for prepayment, because basically I'm taking money away from them. So, but I'm, you know, I'm happy that they don't view me as a credit risk.
Always a good thing.
Yeah. And since I knew I was going to be paying for it, I did splurge on some stuff. Like, I got the really, really good thermal paste for the thermal compound for the laptop. By the way, for those of you out there, here's a little advice. Just even no matter how cool you have on the your PC, like you have the liquid cooled and it's fan cooled and all that stuff, that means nothing in terms of where you store it, because guess what? It is still generating heat. It's just the heat is being pushed out. And if you don't have ventilation, guess what? That heat is going to come right back. Mm-hmm. So you can have all the cooling you want in a PC. Just make sure it's in a well-ventilated place, or else that cooling is for nothing. Just a little thing. I'm also getting a free Xbox Game Pass for PC, but it's worthless to me because I have the Ultimate, which gives me everything. So I'm just going to send you the code, Scott, since...
Thank you. Okay.
And there's a lot of neat stuff that's free on Game Pass for the year, so... I know I don't need to give it to TJ because he gets stuff for free.
Yeah, I'm okay. No worries.
By the way, I told you that Hard West was on sale for $2 on Steam for a bit.
I did remember you saying something about that, but I couldn't remember what that game was. Also, I was in.
I told you it was a Western version of XCOM.
That's right. But I was also in Canada land during that time.
So what? You can buy stuff on Steam on your cell phone. It'll be waiting for you when you get home.
I missed my chance.
Let me see how much hardware. I'm pretty sure it's just $10 normally. Oh, wait. It's still 90% off. It's still $2. So if you want to do it now. Oh, no. Not anymore. It's actually $20. Wow. It was 90% off at the time. So that's why it was $2.
Yeah, it looks like an isometric Midwest game.
It's XCOM, just with... And it has, you know, it's XCOM, but it also has a poker hand mechanic.
Huh.
So, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's okay. It isn't... It's functioning like XCOM. It's not quite as good, but... It is as close to the XCOM clones I've ever gotten to being like XCOM. Because that's the thing about XCOM is that we've seen about a half billion clones, you know, of people trying to recreate XCOM. This game actually came close to really matching it. Huh. Of course, it's in the West. Anyways, let's talk about what we've been playing. I'll go first. First things off, I actually played and finished After Party. I don't know if it's as good as Oxenfree. Here's the problem with After Party. I did not like the main characters at all, and I did not like the other characters. There's just something about them that just turned me off. And part of it is that I'm really tired of watching stuff from the viewpoint of college graduates and being written by 30-somethings. It just comes off as them trying to be like Joss Whedon, and I don't like Joss Whedon anyway, but it just comes off as forced.
Is that a Steve Buscemi meme? Hello, fellow kids.
No, not quite like that. It's just that the writing is a little bit too clever.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, I did have fun, and I could see where there's going to be multiple endings, but I decided I'm not going to bother with finding out the multiple. I had my ending. I liked it. No, I don't want to bother again. Actually, I was the same way with Oxenfree. I got an ending in Oxenfree, and I had no desire to get a different ending. It's like, I don't need to see it. I like this ending. This is my ending. Any other endings are not my canon, so screw it.
Yeah, I can understand that mentality. You feel satisfied with the story, and you don't need any further explanation for
it. That's why I haven't played Fallout 4 again, because, you know, I sided with the Railroad, and I took out the Institute, and I enjoyed going back to the Railroad and Elder Maxon's the Brotherhood of Steel, and I just loved how the Railroad said, well, you know, that was a great job, but why didn't you ask us to come along? And even better, when you go to the Brotherhood of Steel, they're like, holy shit. This group who we thought were nothings are a lot more dangerous than we thought they were. And just watching that oh crap from Elder Maxon was satisfying. Oh yeah, and I did take Sean with me. I mean, little Sean, the robot Sean.
Huh.
And that was cute, because I gave him stuff. He was an inventor. Oh, I made this laser gun for you. Quite advanced for an 8-year-old, but then again, he is a robot. So, yeah. I also have started playing The Outer Worlds. And I hate to say this, it's not doing it for me.
What's wrong with it?
The combat, here's the thing. Everything I didn't like about Fallout 4 goes for The Outer Worlds. I just don't like the characters, and I especially don't like the weapons. And the one thing that bugs me the most is having weapons that degrade. That just burns me the wrong way. That was the one thing that I really hated about System Shock 2. Always having to constantly repair your weapons.
It's expensive to do it, too.
I mean, I barely tolerated it in World of Warcraft.
I'm also playing the game, and I spec'd myself as an engineer, so repairing my weapons isn't as hard for me.
Yeah, you don't even have to go to a bench. You can just repair them right there in front of you if you have the engineer spec.
Mm-hmm. But even, like, if you do that, like, you have to have a bunch of a certain part to do it, and B, going to any store to repair your stuff, it's like, I mean, early in the game, you're getting to about maybe 500 bits every time you go to the store, unless you finished like a major quest. Bits is the currency in the game, and you're spending like 400 bits to repair all your equipment. It's like ridiculous how much you spend on just repairing everything.
And the weapons, I really don't like the weapons so far. I mean, I haven't gotten off the first planet, so that's how early. I mean, I have ideas of where it's going. What I've heard also bothers me. I heard that later in the game they basically both sides it, which I can't imagine that, both sides in it, because in the first part of the company is depicted as so bad and evil. I mean, okay, so the backstory is that you're a colonist on a colony ship called the Hope. And this is not spoiling, this is basically the setup. So you're rescued by a crazy, what's it called, who's clearly not inspired by Morty. Definitely not an inspiration inspired by Morty. There's no there's no inspiration there. They definitely did not rip off Morty. Anyways, and now the Hope is just a legend because the company refuses to bring the ship back. So they just say, yeah, it's a legend, never existed. So when you come down, you know, and everybody's, all the guards are spouting off the company's slogan. I will say, you know, it is a very funny game. It is genuinely funny. It made me laugh out loud a few times, which is rare for me playing a game. But on the other hand, I don't like the characters. I don't like, you know, I don't like my own character. It's just...
You don't like your own character.
No. Yeah, isn't your own character a blank slate?
Not quite. You do have a personality. It's just your dialogue choices spin you to which way your allegiances are going to be.
Right.
You know, by the way, I opted for stealth and speechcraft, so it doesn't take much to lie. I mean, in the beginning of the game, you only need 1 point in speech to lie. But there are other things that require a bit more to, you know. And it's Obsidian, so they're going to be, you know, there. You can already see, when you look through the screens, you can see your allegiances. So immediately you think, oh, this is Fallout New Vegas 2, except it's in space. So the big improvement that probably everybody knows is that it's using the Unreal Engine 4 rather than the Gamebryo engine. Gamebryo is what they use, what Bethesda's been using for the past 20 years for their Elder Scrolls and Fallout games, right? It's the Gamebryo engine?
Yes.
Okay. So they're using so it looks much better. It is gorgeous. And I'm using the Xbox One X, so it's going in 4K with really high resolution. So it looks better than anything Bethesda's made in a very long time. So there, it has that going for it.
The repair mechanic has been in a lot of games, and yeah. I wonder does anyone ever really enjoy having to repair their stuff?
It's realism, and I'm putting that in finger quotes right now. And I'm going to tell you, realism does not mean fun, you know.
Right.
But here's the thing. I wouldn't mind it as so much as TJ noted, it's expensive. I mean, I'd rather just have it... You know, here's the thing. I like what they do with, say, lockpicking. It's sort of like Deus Ex, you know. Your lock skill just tells you how long and how many lockpicks you're going to use. And you don't have to do any minigame. You just hold down the X, and it unlocks it. That's it. That's what I'd like to see with repairing. If you have to have weapon degradation... I know they have to make it so that it's, you know, I'd rather if you have a high engineering skill, your weapons degrade slower, so that the motivation for having a high engineering is that your weapons never degrade.
There is a perk early in the game that you can take that slows the degradation of your equipment by 25%.
Yeah, no, I mean, make it a part of these skills, not one of the perks.
Sure.
You know, or, you know, just have anything else, you know, or just, you know, lower the price. I mean, you have degradation in World of Warcraft, but usually, to repair it, it's usually in terms of, well, it depends on the equipment you have, you know. Early game, it's like a couple of coppers, you know, and then it becomes silver. You played World of Warcraft, Scott, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, very few weapons, you know, if you have to spend gold to repair something, it's usually a purple item.
Right. Usually, and if you've got a purple item and you have to spend gold, hopefully you're already making
a
lot
of gold. Yeah. So, you know, TJ, you've been playing. What do you think?
I've been having a very good time. I'm playing as a asshole with a heart of gold. which is to say I'm brusque and mean, but I'm also helping people. I'm mean to Parvati all the time, who is like the game's absolute – everybody loves Parvati. She's everybody's sweetheart in the Outer Worlds. She can do no wrong, and everybody thinks that she's just the absolute, like, protect Parvati at all costs.
Okay, so before we go on, in this game, you have the options to have companions. And if you do get a companion, like in Mass Effect, they will sometimes – affect who you're talking with. Some people may recognize it and say, oh, hey, blah, blah, blah. You know, your father was this and that and the other thing. You know, or you can lone wolf it. And there's actually a perk for lone wolfing it, and there's also a perk for having a companion. Like, one of the first perks is that if you have a companion, you get 25% more on your experience for your kills.
Yes. And they really did a good job with the companion system, like over what they had in New Vegas, because not only can you bring two with you as like party members, they also have banter with each other, which is pretty fun.
Well, they do that in Mass Effect and in Dragon Age too. I mean, those are BioWare games, not Obsidian.
Sure. And they also have unique skills that they can do. Like Parvati, if you activate her partner skill, she will whip out her hammer and do an area of effect shock attack that will stun monsters for a while and is really helpful for setting up shots on their vulnerable spots.
By the way, do you enjoy the – one thing I do enjoy is that during the loading screens, they basically give you dissections of all the animals that you see in the game.
Which I think is fun.
You can even see where their poop hole is.
The really creepy one is the Mantisaur Queen. All I gotta say is a bug ejaculating titties.
Okay.
In any case, the game has been mostly fun for me. Like I didn't say it was a bad game.
I'm just not feeling it.
I went into it expecting just like an updated version of like Fallout New Vegas in space, and I haven't been disappointed so far.
Well, it is Fallout New Vegas in space.
All it really had to do for me was be better than Fallout 4, and so far it's doing that because it doesn't make me build bases. And people don't bother me on the regular telling me to go take over whatever place and get it back from the monsters or whoever the hell is there. I liked parts of Fallout 4, but it was full of like stupid menial tasks that it made me just like not want to keep. It felt like chores. The Outer Worlds so far, for what I've felt like there are a lot of side quests in the game, but I haven't felt like dragged down by like all these menial tasks that everybody keeps asking me to do.
Get those graveyard fees, you know, doing for that. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, you know, what Obsidian's done with the Outer Worlds probably is making Microsoft really, really happy because they know what to expect from them. Because the game has been getting high 80s, low 90s. Across the board,
for sure. It's not a perfect game, and I admit that. But it is fun. It is a good RPG. That said, and we'll talk about it later when the subject comes up. People are talking a lot about are making a lot of comparisons between Outer Worlds and Disco Elysium.
I know Disco Elysium is the darling right now. We'll discuss that in a bit. The thing is that, you know, I wonder how much of this is just me being burned out by this kind of game in the first place. You know, here's the thing. When you're playing, I don't want to play a role-playing game in which you're wielding a gun, because that means you have to level up your aim and all that stuff. No, when I play a first-person shooter, any kind of shooter, I know it's technically not a shooter, but, by the way, this game has sort of a VAT system. Basically, instead of almost freezing time and picking out, you know, where you're going to shoot, basically you can... You hold down whichever trigger that you have on your controller, depending on which version you're using, and it slows down time for a certain period of time. And I'm telling you right now, the one perk that I got almost immediately was the perk that gives you 25% more of that.
That does sound very useful.
Yes. And they put in the second tier of perks, they put in this game's version of Grim Reaper's Sprint, which if you don't know from Fallout, if you got Grim Reaper's Sprint, killing things would give you more VATS points back. In this version, if you get this second perk in the second tier, it will give you time on that slowdown thing back for every enemy you kill.
You know, here's the thing. The way the game is, you know, it wouldn't be diminished if you could slow motion at any time. You know, I mean, they have to make a game out of it, but just straight up shooting is like in Fallout. It's just not that fun. You do want to hit the slow mo, you know, the bullet time as often as possible so you can get some real shots in. But anyways, here's the thing. You're not DJ Scott. You're not going to regret playing it if you buy it. And by the way, it is on Game Pass, both on PC and Xbox. So when you get the code, you'll be able to play it without having to purchase it.
That's excellent. So, I haven't. Like I said, I haven't played this game yet, but it looks good. And I think some of the bits that TJ has tweeted about actually sounded like there was some intelligent story stuff on there.
Well, here's the thing. I know you were burned out on Fallout 4, Scott, so you'll probably enjoy this.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Like I said, it plays a lot like Fallout 4, but without the VATS and without the time slow mechanic in place of the VATS. And without all the menial, like, go fix this base, go take over this base, and then go build stuff for this base.
Yeah, your base is, we should talk about this. Your base is your ship. So what happens is that you crash. Unfortunately, your pod crashes on the pilot of the ship, and you take over the role of that of the ship owner, you know, the bounty hunter that was supposed to retrieve you. So you're now Alex Hawthorne. So basically, the ship is your base, and that's all you have to worry about. And you know, there's none of the let's build 500 bases around the entire thing.
Right. I do like you have just one base, and I do also like that this is not a post-apocalyptic world. This is an alien world.
It's
yeah,
not a fantasy world either. So right. I wonder if that was Obsidian was thinking. Well, you know, the Elder Scrolls is fantasy, and Fallout is post-apocalyptic. Oh, let's do future. Ray gun future. You know, it's retro future, mm-hmm. by the way. It's basically what you'd see if Pip-Boy was wearing a space helmet, basically.
Right.
So you still have the 50s aesthetic.
That's fine.
And like I said, since it's not using the Gamebryo engine, it looks much better than Fallout does. And one of the big things about Unreal Engine, now I haven't tested this yet, but you can actually get some really low resolutions if your PC can't, you know, hack something with and still maintain some level of beauty. I don't know. You have to play it yourself.
Uh-huh.
One of the games I've also been playing, which is getting off the Game Pass, and I decided I would better play it before it goes away, and that's Thomas Was Alone. I've watched the YouTube, so I know exactly the entire thing, but this is the first time I'm actually playing it. The only problem I have with Thomas Is Alone on the Xbox One X is, for some reason, the jump is really mushy. I don't know what it is. It's like, it's hard. I swear I press the button and he doesn't, and the character won't jump. So, for those who don't know, Thomas Was Alone is an extremely minimalist game. Basically, it's a platformer with basic geometric shapes, each of them having their own thing. The thing that makes the game, and this has been out a while, this is released in, like, what, 2015? Something like that? Maybe even earlier than that?
Sure. Yeah, it's been a while.
Is the music and the narration. The narration and the music, basically, and it has that meta feel that you have from Stanley Principle?
Parable,
right. It's basically like that, except with geometric shapes. And, you know, it's amazing because you start getting attached to the characters because they have names and they have personalities that are narrated to you. Like, you know who Thomas is, you know, and James is very interesting because James is very clearly an amalgam for an LGBT because he's the one who's inverted. He does everything back. He does everything. He's the one. He jumps down, you know, like gravity is inverted for him. And he talks about having, you know, being made fun of and how his point of view is different, you know, and how he's shocked that Thomas treats him like normally. The coming out story is kind of obvious with him. And then you have the big block who says, Claire, who says, I'm a superhero. Now, none of these characters, it's all the narration, you know, being told to you by, I think, the same guy who narrated the Stanley Parable. And you have every division has dialogue from scientists who are talking about these AIs that are starting to form, you know, and how, and the story really builds up. You don't quite know what's going on until you realize what's going on at the very end, you know. I mean, the story is well known. If you don't want to buy the game, you can just watch the YouTube videos without, and you won't miss anything. The only reason why I'm playing it is because I want the achievement points.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, Thomas Was Alone, if you want to buy it, I wonder how much it is on Steam now. I have to
check. Can't be much.
It's $10. So, and it came out back in 2012. Yeah, so like I said, yeah, if you haven't played Thomas Was Alone, you know, you should. It's very linear. It's a puzzle platform. It's very linear, but I'm gonna say it again. It's like the Stanley Parable. You're gonna enjoy what's it called? Just the meta commentary and just getting to know these geometric shapes. By the way, one thing I found out, which is a nice thing, that the Return of the Obra Dinn is coming to console, Xbox One and PS4. I think it already did. It already come to Switch.
Return of the Obra Dinn, yes.
Okay, so yeah, it's coming to PS4 and Xbox One, so that's probably going to be the next game I'm going to be playing. Because you know, I love Papers, Please, and Lucas Pope. You know, people rave about it. The only problem about Return of the Obra Dinn is it's extremely linear. And once you complete the game, there's no reason to play it again unless you want to play the story, because it's a murder, it's a mystery, and basically what you're doing is you're saying who these people are, how they died, and what their name is. Yeah, well, that's the same thing. What their name is and how they died, and that's all you're doing. You're going around this ship, which looks like a Mac OS, because it's one bit graphics, so it's either the pixels are either on or off. So you have this, it looks like, if you ever used a Mac back in 1984, 1985, that's what it looks like, you know.
Hmm.
And you play it once, but you know what? Everybody raves about it. I mean, you know, Papers, Please is sort of linear. I mean, I've learned on various levels of Papers, Please. Oh, yes, I know that when you get to the part in which Kolechians and are not allowed or have to have their things and you have to check for contraband, I always know the last eight of them are going to be collections, and they all have contraband. I don't even have to. I immediately know. Yep, just do the scanner and kick them out, or send them into the place where people seem to go in and never come out. You know, I already know when Vince Lestrade comes. I just say, "Oh look, I found you, Vince. Goodbye." So yeah, I mean, it's not linear, but it is linear. Papers, Please. But like I said, I want to try to Return of the Obra Dinn. I think it's going to be one of those games that you have to play once.
Yeah, it definitely does seem like that kind of game.
And by that I mean once in your lifetime, you actually have to play it at some
point. It's an experience. It's a weird, unique experience, which is what Papers, Please was, which wasn't for everybody. But the Obra Dinn is actually like, it's almost like a walking simulator, but like a walking simulator taken in a really, really interesting, bizarre direction.
It's also extremely educational. You have to learn about sailing ships from – it takes place in 1705. So technically the 18th century, but 1705, so say 17th century. You learn all about ships, you know, what bosuns do, that, you know, whatever. You know, just everything you learn a lot about sailing. And you have to Sherlock Holmes it. Like, you have to figure out who this person is. You have to look through notes and all that stuff. So it's very immersive. Like Papers, Please. You know, you have to look through your notes. You have to figure out stuff. And it's very Lovecraftian. I won't give anything away. So yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. What have you been playing, TJ, besides The Outer Wilds? The Outer Worlds. Damn Outer Wilds! Outer Wilds just made it confusing. You know, had Outer Wilds not existed, I would have just Outer Worlds. But Outer Wilds is so good that it's sort of like it's a completely different game to the Outer Worlds. It's a lot more. Have you played The Outer Wilds?
I have.
Okay. It's a lot more. What was the word? The word is on the tip of my tongue. It's a lot more contemplative and spiritual. Basically, in that game, you're just exploring. I have only gotten as far as that planet with those gigantic whirlpools, or the terrain is made of water. Which is, you know, every time I visit it, I always get nervous because it's like, Jesus. It's a contemplative game.
So last week, I was in Calgary. I have never been. They had a thing up there called Reboot Red, which is a small convention. It's mostly developers. I met a lot of people, including Suda51 and Swery. And those people were Swery had a little monkey, a little plush monkey in a pink shirt with a medallion. It was like a medallion pinned to its chest.
A cat puppet or a cat doll.
And we were sitting there for the interview, and the monkey was part of the interview.
What about Suda51?
Suda was a little bit more reserved, I think. Like he had some quirky answers, but like both of them were fun.
I pictured him wearing a pink suit with clown shoes and a rubber nose.
They save all that for the game design. Yeah. Actually, Swery was very eccentric.
I haven't played Lollipop Chainsaw yet.
But they were great to talk to, and I also played a whole bunch of games while I was out there, like one of which was I played a Metroidvania that's going to be coming next year. Oh my god, what was the name of it?
Oh, I did play Code Vein, by the way. I almost forgot. I liked it and I didn't like it at the same time. I was not in the mood for another Dark Souls game.
Forgon was the name of this game. Okay. It's being developed and published by Big Blue Bubble. I do not know what else they've done. It looks like they've done some games called Zombie Blocks, Chaos Reborn, My Singing Monsters. In any case,
Google Bobble?
No, but this was very similar to like Blasphemous and Salt and Sanctuary. It was
a 2D Dark Souls. Got it.
Sort of. Yes, it was a little tough. But the movement and the attacks and the abilities were very stylish, and it was very, very crisp in its movement. And the animations were very, very nice. Like I thought that these were like pixelated sprites that I was looking at. No, the game is actually rendered in 3D, and then they just apply a filter to make it look like pixelated sprites, which is really cool. Like it's really cool the way they set up this game.
Have you played Code Vein?
I have not played it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, if you like Dark Souls, it'll fit right in. It's an unusual game. There's some mechanics that are just off the wall baddie, which I'll leave you to experience for yourself.
Off the wall baddie in a vampire game? Absurd.
Were they vampires? You're sucking up blood and all that stuff, but it's not like you have fangs and you chomp right in.
They are vampires. That's why I thought you were being cheeky.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I know they had. Here's the thing. I know they sucked blood, but they didn't suck blood like a vampire. They don't do.
Yeah. That. They do some sort of weird anime bullshit.
Yeah.
but keep an eye on Forkon.
I should have known. You know, they do get sparkly, so yeah. So it's actually Twilight Dark Souls.
It's Twilight Rules, yeah. But keep an eye on Forgon. If you like Dead Cells, if you like Blasphemous, if you like Salt and Sanctuary, Forgon is definitely going to be one you want to keep your eye on. Well, it's coming sometime in 2019.
Blasphemous is more of a Metroidvania than a Dark Souls game.
Yeah, well, I would say that Dead Cells is kind of a Metroidvania too. It's just difficult.
I guess. but yeah. How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
I've been playing Luigi's Mansion 3 on the Switch.
Of course you have. It was released on Halloween.
Yep, it was released on Halloween, stroke of midnight. I got it the next day. I was fine. I was just doing it that way. And I've been enjoying it so far. I've been basically taking all the coins that I can with his ghost vacuum machine. Which is really just very satisfying and fun. You're just knocking things around and sucking up all the money and coins, and you use the machine to fight the ghosts and suck them up. I haven't gotten too far, but I am enjoying the mechanics of the game. Enjoying the little Virtual Boy map, little red map interface you get to use to keep track of where you are.
You know, the funny thing is that Luigi's Mansion 3 looks like Luigi's Mansion and Luigi's Mansion 2. They were very... it's like you're playing just a high-resolution GameCube game.
Yeah. But, you know, it's entertaining, and I guess for some people that's enough, and... I mean, that's what I was expecting, a Luigi's Mansion game, and that's what it is.
How many games have you collected, huh?
I got one so far, I think, or two. Actually, I got two different kind of gems. It's a little bit
the
weird.
The 8F gems.
I got the square one, and then I got the diamond-shaped one.
Yeah, well, there are 8 gems, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Well, I think I got two. They're placed on different categories, it seemed like. They're a little bit tricky to get out, so I don't know if I have all the tools yet. I have a little ray that pops people out of their paintings, and of course I have the whole vacuum and reverse vacuum mechanic. But I think there's the slime Luigi. I haven't gotten that part yet.
Yeah. Like I said, Luigi has a lot more personality than Mario. Mario's just a slog. He's just at least Luigi shows emotion.
Right. Plenty of emotion, a lot of emotion.
Usually scared, but...
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about this the other day. By this point, Luigi has killed so many undead creatures, he could technically classify as a Belmont.
I was saying, you know, Luigi Belmont...
Well, here's the thing. What happens when Luigi dies and he has to deal with all these ghosts? They're gonna have it out for him. He's gonna have such a hard time.
Yeah.
Luigi Belmont can handle it.
Yeah.
So, by the way, I'm finally considering trying out Minecraft soon. Since, you know, with the Game Pass, I get free Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
The one game that I really want to play is the new Garden Warfare. It's basically Garden Warfare 3. They call it something else. You know, they dropped the number. It looks like they're probably going to do a lot of the live service thing with it. But, you know, I really enjoyed Garden Warfare and Garden Warfare 2, so I can't imagine not playing the third Garden Warfare.
Right.
One of the complaints I heard about it is that they've streamlined it. So, you no longer have the 500 variations on the same thing, like a pea shooter. You no longer have the ice pea shooter, the... fire pea shooter, these fast pea shooter, you know. Nope, just one, and you add different abilities to it. And I don't know how to feel about that. I'm pretty sure PopCap knows about play balance, so... Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. The first game news is Diablo 4 was announced, for one thing, but that's not the news. Diablo 4 will not have an offline mode, and the game is, quote-unquote, not coming anytime soon. This comes to us from PC Gamer. Diablo 4 will not have an offline mode and will require an internet connection to play, Blizzard said during an interview at BlizzCon yesterday. We asked lead designer Joe Shelley if it's possible to play Diablo 4 online. There's a large, seamless, connected, and shared space in the world, going down into the dungeons, being able to group with your friends, trading, and PvP. We feel it's the best way to experience that is in a world that is online, Shelley responded. Okay, I'm going to stop right here. You know the last person who said something like that? That was EA Maxis about SimCity, where they literally said, well, if you're not playing online, you're not having a full experience.
Isn't that just World of Warcraft, though? I mean, you have to be online to play that.
The shared open world essentially gives Diablo 4 the form of an MMO, so it's not surprising that it will require a always-on internet connection in order to populate the world with other players. You'll be able to play solo, but not offline, which doesn't make any friggin' sense. Detailed during the Diablo 4 unveiled panel, Diablo 4 will feature world events, towns that act as social hubs, PvP zones, and a persistently populated open world. The decision makes sense for a more social Diablo 4. It has become the norm in the years since Diablo 3's release, which is one of the first games to adopt the then-controversial always-online approach. During the panel, Blizzard said that Diablo 4's release is a long ways off. We're not coming out. It's not coming. We're not coming out soon. Not even Blizzard soon, said director Luis Barriga. As one ponders an always online Diablo, one can't help remember the legendarily bad connection issues Diablo 3 experienced when it debuted back in 2012. Even so many years later, the specter of Error 37 hangs over the series. Diablo 3 was inaccessible to some players for days after launch, after which Blizzard had implemented a login queue system. Another much criticized element of Diablo 3, the Real Money Auction House, closed in 2014 and does not show signs of being revived for the sequel. Basically, I'm not playing Diablo 4. I don't need to. Fourth thing, Diablo 2 is just fine. Number one. I didn't much like Diablo 3. I didn't like the design anyway. So I can give Diablo 4 a hard pass.
Yeah.
Because I am an antisocial shut-in. I don't want to deal with other players. Sorry, but in my roguelikes, it's just me and no one else, and I'm having a good time playing by myself. Just look at FTL.
I mean, it's a ways down the line, and like even though they did show a decent amount, I still don't feel like comfortable making a judgment call on it yet. I mean, it could be – they don't even have a release date on it, right?
Well, they said when it's done – so it could be 14 years from now, just like Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah, I feel like we're still a long, long way off from seeing what Diablo 4 – like, we got a glimpse of it, but I feel like we're still a long ways off from seeing what Diablo 4 actually has in store for us.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, Diablo 1 and 2 were unique in being action RPGs. There was nothing really like it. Now you have Paths of Exile, and you have Torch – Torchlight. You know, you have all these games that are doing it. You have The Binding of Isaac, for crying out loud, which is basically Diablo meets Zelda meets someone's nightmare. So I don't really need a Diablo 4 in my life. It's just like NBA 2K20. I don't need you in my life. I don't need you. Sorry. I vote with my wallet.
Poor Diablo 4. Jonah has outgrown you.
I don't need it. It's just, and if you know, congrats if people can put up with it. I'm not saying don't buy it. I'm just saying I vote for my wallet. I don't need it. I don't. You know, that's the freedom. I loved NBA 2K, but you know, if they don't want me, I don't want them. I'm the customer.
Yeah, I can understand that feeling when a game just doesn't seem to be catered to your play style or what you want to do. It's not something you need, then, in, you know.
I still haven't played The Sims 4, which is a shame because there are so many expansions for that thing. Although I'm going to say right now, they're at their point in which if you want, it's like Crusader Kings 2 or even The Sims 3 and 2, said if you want the entire game, you're going to have to spend a good $300 for it.
Yikes, that is a lot.
There's so many expansions. You know what? I really, you know, which expansion I really like is the laundry expansion for The Sims 4, in which you do laundry. They're coming out. They're finally coming out with the university expansion for The Sims 4.
Yeah, I saw that. That was interesting.
But the problem is, you know, they had the university expansion in The Sims 2, which was done even better. You know, the only reason why I like The Sims 3 is that now everybody ages with you. Remember in The Sims 2. You'd have this weird thing, and if you only stayed with one family, you have the kids growing up and being grandparents, and their friends are still infants. And I'm not going to just play the, you know, at least in Sims 3, they aged with you, so you didn't have that bullshit. I don't know. The Sims is like a vacuum, you know. I don't want to get back into The Sims also because I don't want to spend my life catering to the needs of these little people, you know. They're not my slaves. I'm their slave. I have to do everything they friggin' want. And you know, and I don't have the heart to drown them in pools or have them starve to death in a closet with no doors.
I really really do. I mean, like, let's put it out on the table here. Blizzard effed up real bad recently. Like, they effed up real bad recently, and that was felt all throughout BlizzCon. Like, for those who don't know,
here's the thing: I'm going to say something. There were protesters outside, right, and all that stuff. But here's the problem I have. Yeah, you're calling out Blizzard for all this, you know, Blitzchung thing. But you're still going to friggin' buy Overwatch 2, and you're still going to buy their shit. So what do they care? You're still buying their money. Like I said, you know, if you don't want to, just don't be a part of it. Vote with your wallet. And what I hate about gamers is that they don't vote with their wallet. Companies say, well, you know, they're going to be loud about it, but guess what? They're still giving us money, so we don't care.
Yeah, well, that's what I was kind of getting at, though, is that, like, working in the press industry, like, as we were going through stories for BlizzCon, there was a lot of pushback on everything for Blizzard that was going on this weekend. And, like, I have to wonder, like, will people remember what happened? But when it comes time, like, to put up or shut up, when it comes time to either buy the game or don't because you have morals, or are they going to forget and just be like, ah, right, Overwatch 2, I forgot about that other thing that was terrible. And I like Blizzard games enough to want to buy them, but man, it does feel scummy, and like also makes me like. It's a hard thing to deal with so many of some of my favorite franchises being owned by a company that clearly cares more about money than it does about
You don't want to talk about Riot Games now, do you? Because they're completely owned by Tencent.
Yeah, but at least Riot Games aren't two-faced about it.
They're one face, and that face is evil.
I know. So I know what I'm getting with Riot Games.
If it wasn't Tencent, then it's the behavior of their executives.
For sure.
And if it isn't the behavior of the executives, they're fucking fans. I mean, if you look up toxic gamer in the dictionary, you have a picture of League of Legends there. But like I said, you know, I don't need Diablo 4. And even if, here's the thing, even if there was no controversy with that, with Hong Kong and everything. Even if there was no controversy, I'm not going to buy Diablo 4 because I don't want an always online game like that. Not in that region. It's not an MMO. What's next? They're going to charge you monthly subscription? You know? No. Or actually, probably not. You know what's going to happen to Diablo 4. You can see it writing on the wall. They want a Fortnite, that thing. They want a live service.
For sure. Games as a service. Although they're... If they are trying to release Overwatch 2 as like a standalone thing where you will actually pay money for it, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because that is not how you run a games with a games as a service.
Rainbow Six Siege. You still have to pay that game. You still have to buy that game.
Yeah, but like years upon years later, they're still putting like full like loads of content in the game.
You still have to buy. Well, actually. Do they still have that tiered purchase, like $15 for the game and nothing with it, and then $30 for the game and something with it? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, there are like tiers of purchase where you can just like straight up buy the base game and a couple operatives, and then you can earn your way up to the other operatives. And then there's like, just like, hey, you don't feel like grinding for hours upon hours to get the characters? Here's all of them. Just pay a flat rate for all the characters. Buy a season of characters.
Yeah. Let's move on, shall we? Go ahead,
sure.
DJ.
Acclaimed detective RPG Disco Elysium coming to Xbox One and PS4 next year from Eurogamer. Developer ZAUM is currently in the throes of porting its acclaimed detective RPG, Disco Elysium, to Xbox One and PS4, and says that it's due to launch on consoles next year. Disco Elysium, which released on PC earlier this month, casts a player as a less-than-upstanding detective who begins the game in a disheveled heap on a hotel room floor, with what rapidly turns out to be alcohol-induced amnesia, conveniently allowing for plenty of scene-setting exposition, and the opportunity for players to shape their anti-hero as they see fit. What follows starts as a murder mystery set in the dilapidated city district of Martinez, and then rapidly explodes out into a sprawling open-world RPG that shapes and shifts depending on players' abilities and the choices they make through the extremely conversation-heavy and impressively expansive adventure.
Yeah, this is a isometric RPG that's masquerading as a... Or actually, it's a text adventure masquerading as a isometric RPG, basically.
Yes, and it is quite frankly like I haven't played it myself yet, but my colleagues can't shut up about it. And like the constant thing I'm hearing about it is like, "Hey, are you playing Outer Worlds? Stop that. Go play Disco Elysium. It's much better."
Well, here's the thing. If the Outer Worlds is Fallout 3 and 4 or Fallout New Vegas, then Disco Elysium is Fallout 1 and 2.
Yeah, that's the Fallout I prefer.
I mean, it's a AA game. It's a $40 game, you know. And you know, here's the thing: people can get bored of the post-apocalypse. They can get bored of dwarves and elves. And this one is, I don't want to call it cyberpunk. It's like 20 minutes into the future. And you can sing karaoke in it. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and like it is definitely like sort of that style where like you can spec yourself out as like a guns a blazing dude, or you can spec yourself out as like an intimidating, burly, angry man who like gets his answers by fear, or you can spec yourself out as someone who is actually compassionate and like sympathetic and cares and like can get inside the mind of people.
Yeah, it has the thought cabinet mechanic, which actually basically shapes your personality.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 60 thoughts that you can that you can combine and put in your thought cabinet, basically.
Yeah, and it's also got a really, really decent art style to it. Like it is isometric, but it has a really, really like sort of... my favorite part about it is that it doesn't go with the noir, annoyingly dark vibe that everybody has done over and over again.
It's pretty neon.
Uh-huh.
Well, neon cards.
I mean, I guess it's called Disco Elysium, so I shouldn't expect a dark noir game, but like it's a dark noir game set in almost I wouldn't say as bright as Hotline Miami, but definitely kind of that vibe.
Yeah. I mean, basically... not only do you have a reputation system, but you also have an internal reputation system, you know, in which you're actually, you know, you're shaping your character from the inside as well as the outside. It's like, it's the next logical step from the system that you saw in Fallout 1 and 2, you know. It's like the special system. Now you have the internal special system. So, yeah. I mean... this game is very dialogue heavy, and that's a major part of the game, which is why people are... it's different. Which is why I kept on suggesting it to you, Scott.
Okay.
If you're comfortable with isometric RPGs, well, this is one that has a little bit added to it. It's sort of like where Larian took the isometric RPG into, you know, being able to affect everything in the world or use anything. Well, this one does it in the reverse direction, in which your character development, and by character I mean personality and all that stuff, not strength, intelligence, wisdom, you know, not that system. I'm talking about dialogue depends on what you put into your thought cabinet and how you deal. So yeah, like TJ said, you know, you can play the game in any style you want, you know, in terms of personality. You can be a brute, you can be an artist, etc., etc., etc.
That does sound interesting. I like having a flexible character creation.
And it's very story rich. Like, it's very heavy on dialogue. It's very heavy on like situations and dealing with people. And like, it is almost like Obsidian split into two wavelengths. And And on one wavelength, they stuck with Fallout New Vegas, and on the other wavelength, they became this other studio that made Disco Elysium. That's
It's like Obsidian and Larian had a baby. But here's the thing: I'm not going to get it on console. I just can't do. I mean, right now I could if I wanted to play Baldur's Gate or Planescape Torment on the Xbox, and I have no interest in doing that. Those are the kind of games I'm going to play on PC. So.
Yeah, like I will play this on console. See, games like Disco Elysium are games that I like playing with Sam, my spouse.
If you want to be next to someone, watch in front of the TV, and you know, and playing together. Too bad this doesn't have a co-op mode.
Yeah, I don't like really taking my laptop and hooking it up to my TV to play games. It's just kind of a hassle. So it coming to console is interesting to me, and I probably will pick it up eventually.
Now, here's the thing. ZAUM Studio describes it. Listen to this. Your skills, the faculties that talk to you in your head, develop notions about you, too. Have you said three artsy things in the last hour? Been telling people you want your name to be Raphael? Trying to recall a lost memory or your home address? Your skills can turn these into full-blown thoughts, like, quote-unquote, actual art degree, quote-unquote, Detective R.A. Cousteau, quote-unquote, the 15th Indo tribe, or, quote-unquote, the lonesome long way home. You can turn yourself into deranged torque dork, constantly thinking about auto-mechanical trivia, or you can torture yourself with white mourning, the shadow of someone you used to love. So that's basically, the way you act changes your personality. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. EA Sports open to bringing back NCAA football game after fair pay to play law. This is from the Bleacher Report. The NCAA football game got one step closer to a comeback Tuesday with the new NCAA regulations that will potentially allow players to make money off their likenesses. It appears EA Sports is also ready to jump both feet in at reviving the beloved video game series. Our position is that we would love to build a game if there's a world where the folks governing these things are able to solve how to pay players for the use of their name and likeness and stats and data. We would jump at the opportunity to build a game in a heartbeat, Electronic Arts CEO Andrew Wilson told Jason Gay of Wall Street Journal last week. Gay's question came in response to California's Fair Pay to Play Act, which makes it illegal for NCAA to prevent players from profiting on their name and likenesses. Other states have introduced similar legislation, and Snowball Effect led the NCAA changing its policy Tuesday.
Okay, let's so it's not going to happen because of that. As a matter of fact, I think EA might be less inclined if all of a sudden they now have to start paying players as well as the NCAA for their for the schools. And here's the thing, by the way, I never gave two craps about the players in NCAA double football. I'd rather have fictional players. That never bothered me. Oh, I can't. It's QB number 11 instead of whoever that is for LSU. So I never really cared.
Yeah, like if they're using the likenesses of players, then those players should get paid. And I know that EA won't do that, but at the same time, it's just I don't know. It's just fair to me.
Well, they're hinting about it. Go ahead.
If I gave a crap about sports, I think I would care about the characters. Like, if I want to play Star Wars, I'd want to play Han Solo or Luke or whatever character, you know?
But here's the thing. I usually play Dynasty mode or career mode. Or not career mode, but, you know, in which you take the role as someone who's building the team. You're going to have fictional players anyway at some point because right. The players that are there are going to be graduating and you'll be getting new players. So they're going to be all fictional anyway. It's never. But here's the thing. Sports games, like, say, the show, they pay two people. They pay the MLB itself and the licensing of the teams, and then they pay the MLBPA to have the real players. You know, and that's basically what they're saying, is they're saying if there's something like the MLBPA in which, you know, everybody in the you know, all the players are under one law, run rule. The problem is that who's going to be under it? You know, what players? Because in college sports, you have the superstars, and then you have walk-ons who do almost nothing. No one's going to want to pay them.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It's just that if they're going to use your name and your likeness in anything, then
but I just don't care.
I do, because the NCAA, for lack of better terms, is legal slavery.
Yeah, I don't mind. Here's the thing. Here's the problem, though. You know, how many players is it going to be? Like, okay, the quarterback is going to be a real person. Then some of the offensive line are just going to be OL number 33. You know, it's going to be the same problem, except some of the players are going to have names. Big whoop.
Yeah, it's a hard sea to navigate with that. It always has been, which is why NCAA went away for a long time. The games.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You know, it's going to be the same thing in real life too. I mean, the thing that says, well, players can now, you know, benefit from their likenesses and their, you know, the numbers. Yeah, but what does that matter about the third string quarterback or third string offensive lineman? No one's going to care about him. So it makes no sense. No one's going to give it. You think people are going to buy his jersey?
Jonah's arguing that he wants there's a popular joke that goes around about an early Japanese baseball video game and the names that were attached to it, because they basically came up with what they thought were American names. Jonah wants to play an NCAA game with players like Todd Gonzalez and Sleeve McDykel.
You know, that's one of the things that really bothers me about MLB 2K13.
Why don't
they
just
have random players, but they have completely random players. You have LaQuisha Wilson or stuff like that. You know, names that don't go together. Just stuff like a Hispanic first name and an Irish second name. Jose O'Connell. You know,
you know, there might be some out there.
Yeah, but it's so random that all the names are like that. It's just,
yeah.
You can see they didn't care. I mean, games that I have, like Out of the Park Baseball, it does recognize ethnic names, so you're not going to have if someone's German, it's not going to be Jose Pizarro, you know? It's going to be two German names stuck together, and they have a lot of them.
Well, I mean, I think it would be easier, technologically speaking, just to make generic characters. I mean, if you're playing college level, I don't really know that people are that into those players.
The problem you had with NCAA football is that sometimes the same name would pop up again. Mm-hmm. Two Jose Smiths or John.
Yeah, I mean, like, when me and my buddies were playing NCAA, we would play the colleges that we liked, and we did follow that stuff. And so when we saw the number of the guy we were looking for, we were like, hell yeah, that's the wide receiver I love, that I love watching every Saturday. And I'm less into NCAA football than I used to be, but like back when I was, yeah, that stuff mattered to us.
And you also had the team builder. The server is shut down now, but you can still download the teams. I mean, there's nothing to stop people from putting real names and real things and customized teams, you know, and just download those. So it is there. There's a game that just came out that has a college mode, and it is fucking terrible. It's like people are hungry for it, and even like five-man teams are coming out with a game, and it's like people are saying, oh, I hope please be good. Please. Oh, it's a piece of crap. Maximum Football, I think it's called. 2019. Sorry, guys. Your game is terrible. You need more people working on it. I can't help it. You released it. Game reviewers can be cruel.
Yeah.
So, anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, it's up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.